Everybody, this is Joel Greenberg reporting to you from beautiful, lovely downtown Green Valley, Arizona. Actually, we're such a small town that I could almost walk to downtown. Anyways,
you were talking about your Skype difficulty, which is funny because it's you're not the only person in the world that has trouble with Skype.
You guys do too, you say?
Oh yeah. The company I work for uses Skype for all their internal phone calls. We don't have like regular telephones. We just use Skype on the computers, and it is a never-ending source of pain and misery. Doesn't work.
My youngest daughter told me about another one called. I have it on here, and I've talked with her on it because you can do multiple. Now. But I forget what it is. Anyways, go ahead. I'm here.
Awesome. And
hi, Joel. It's
working. And you put a lot of things. You gave me a big homework assignment to do for this time around. And I want you to know that I did it.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Well, Jay is off at his religious pilgrimage.
I know where he's at because I listen to lots and lots of 2A and firearms training podcasts, and they're all gone to lost wages.
Yep.
And so it's been a dearth of things to listen to, so I have been listening to conservative talk.
Oh, no.
And in particular, really only one. Because I can get him on a podcast, and his 3-hour program becomes 2 hours because punches out of a whole bunch of commercials enough to get it down to 2 hours. And
you know what? I listen when I'm like in the car or something like that. I don't listen to the actual radio. I listen to my phone, which I've got.
I wouldn't be driving too much around. He's on here at 4:00 in the afternoon. That's Mark Levin.
Oh yeah, I've heard him. But I dislike commercials so much now that because I listen to podcasts and I listen to stuff like that where they've been removed. When I'm in one of those weird situations where I'm forced to like listen to the actual radio or watch the actual broadcast TV and I see all the commercials and I listen to them, I'm just like, what is this? And how do people put up with it? Because it's awful.
Yes, I know. It's you know what I've done. There's certain TV programs I like, and they have commercials in them. So what I do is I don't watch almost anything. When it comes to the dramas and the movies that are on commercial TV, I don't watch any of them live. I DVR them.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yes.
And I fast forward through the commercials.
Yep.
And you'd be surprised. There's so many commercials that an hour program can be anywhere from 45 to 50 minutes long, and that's it.
Yeah, or less.
Of course, the talk shows really are only they're only about 40 minutes per hour of talk too. They're all commercials.
Yep.
And so it's been and the question to ask because of that is, Joel, why do you bother to do that? You're retired. You're sitting around. Why not take the commercials that takes up time during the day? It's because I can't stand the commercials.
Exactly. They're dumb.
Just like you. That's not on the agenda. Okay.
Yep.
Now, let me,
I get a little offended at commercials because, you get cable television and you're paying for the cable television, correct?
So correct.
And you are paying for them to advertise to you, which seems.
Well, I get a bunch of movie channels too, but that's not quite as good as you think. And once in a while, they'll offer, "Hey, you can get a free here's a free movie if you want or something." And then I'll then watch them because I can go to the it'll be any movie, and I can go to the expensive ones, which here are $6.99. In other words, $7.
Yeah.
So, but generally, I don't see the movies till they're on the actual movie cable channels that I pay a little extra for, like HBO and stuff. But that's worth it.
Hey, Joel, your appearance on the last time you were here on the Squirrel Court, according to the Facebook page, everybody loved your appearance and thought you were thought you were entertaining and interesting and asked to have you back. And so I'm glad you are back this evening with us. So how have you been? Anything exciting in the interim?
Well, what's interesting, my arthritis, which is because of my back, goes into my leg, has been bothering me a little more. And so I've been reducing the amount of time I'm not in the house. I have plenty of stuff in the house. I'm one of those guys who has a refrigerator full of stuff and cabinets just chock-a-blocked, you know. I'm not, I wouldn't, what do you call those guys who are prepared for anything?
A prepper.
I'm not quite there, but what I have learned is, and I'll go out once in a while, and as long as it's going to bother me arthritically, I'll just go whole hog, spend a whole bunch of money, and then stock everything up, and then I don't have to go for a long time. And I've learned a neat lesson from somebody else, which was, is that if you keep your refrigerator and freezer full, then it works less, because once it gets everything cold, and everything that's cold or frozen helps keep the thing cold and frozen. So
thermal mass.
With trash, it would be good. And we've had power outages here. And I'm all electric home, you know, takes forever to turn the electric stove on. It takes forever before you can touch it again. Joel, you touch hot phones? Yeah, what the heck, you know. Listen, I got one thing for you, Brita.
Yes.
From last time.
Okay. Are you checking your notes?
What's happening here is that it's telling me that we're in the middle of this conversation. It wants to upgrade or do something.
Oh, yeah. Just tell it no. Okay.
That's
Skype.
Skype. Always the challenge. You haven't gone to COD yet, right?
Skype.
Say it again.
Sorry, I interrupted.
You have not yet gone to the COD.
I have not.
Okay, now here's the challenge for you.
Okay.
To go. But
okay.
There's, and let me go a couple steps here.
Okay.
All of the World War II diesel boats that are around country as museums have had the forward and after torpedo room vertical ladders pulled out and stairwells in, except for the top. Except for the top. So it's a vertical ladder.
Huh.
So this is making it doubly extra challenging.
Okay.
Take some people, whatever, and I have a friend who goes around and tours those, and they talk people into doing a lot of stuff. One of the things he talks them into is they don't generally let people into the conning tower. And for super extra, you go down, take a tour, take a picture of you in each of the rooms.
Okay.
And, you know, to show that you did, you put it on the Squirrel Report, send them to me. You know, people should see this because this is, you will find this a little bit challenging, and it's good because you're up to the challenge.
Well, let me just tell you something. There's a number of Cleveland area things that I have never visited. And the U.S., like, I've never gone to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, even though it's kind of like one of our big things. Never been there. And so the USS Cod has just never been on my list of things to go to. But I will definitely go to, although you will have to wait until spring, summer, because I believe it's closed for the season because it's cold.
Yes, I understand. That's okay. I'm going to give you a double challenge, and this gives extra credit.
Oh, boy. Okay.
They don't generally let the general public into the conning tower.
Hmm.
I can get in because I can show them I'm a submariner, and because I used to work on the Pampanito in San Francisco when I lived up in Northern California.
Okay.
To help them with tours of Boy Scouts and things like that. And anytime I came, I could go in the conning tower. And if there were people standing around me, they'd let me take them up with me. And then I can walk them through the conning tower. So the top shelf grade is you're getting, and it's a ladder in the control rooms. Again, a vertical ladder. And it may be difficult with the little hatchway into the conning tower. That may or may not be a problem. If you can get all the way in, the super double serendipity extra credit is a picture of you somebody takes with your phone of you, you know, on the periscope.
Oh boy.
If you can't get that far, climb up the ladder, stick your head up in so that you can look and see the conning tower and how tiny it is.
Okay.
Have somebody one
Are
of
you
the
gonna get me arrested, work, Joel?
I hope not. you know, I have a friend here in Green Valley who loves submarines. He's a 2A guy, and he has a show once a week doing 2A stuff on the radio that I listen to, and we've been friends for a gazillion years. And he's managed to talk people into he's gone around. He's the guy who went to the seawall, and he's talked them all into letting him up in the conning tower. So if he can do it, you can do it.
Okay.
But if you can't get all the way up, get somebody, stick your head up far enough so you can see, and then have somebody in the conning tower, one of the helpers, take a picture of you with your head stuck up through the hatch, okay?
You know, I think this would be a good adventure for me and Hayden to do.
Whoever you want to bring with you, bring a team of 20 people, that's fine.
You know? I think Hayden would enjoy it.
He probably would.
I think he would like it.
He talks, yes, he would. He would enjoy it very much.
All right, it's on the list.
And if you can show me with the pictures, then I will have my friend who's a very good at he does these for me all the time. I'll send you an honorary submariner certificate. Wow.
Okay.
Wow. What
it's
a
reward. It's a challenge. Okay.
Okay. So that covers.
Is the cod floating or is it on the land? I can't remember.
I don't know, floating. Actually.
Okay. Because the Kavala down in Galveston's on land. It's not
floating. Right. And the Razorback in Arkansas, I think, is on land. And there may be a couple others. But the Pampanito was in water alongside the pier. Pier was near Pier 49. I think it was near Pier 49 or something is the famous one. But there was a couple piers down from that. And what you will find is, at least on the Pampanito, this may not be the case on the cod, we had everything working. There were no batteries. The batteries had to come out, and the screws, the propellers had to come off. But the engines ran, and all the galley equipment worked.
Wow.
And when we brought Boy Scouts down, they slept overnight on board, and they cooked breakfast in the galley and everything else. And at ceremonies, because the people around there didn't, you light off a diesel engine and you puff out lots of black smoke. And they don't like that particularly. So we had to get permission, but we were allowed to do that at ceremonies. And generally, we just light off one engine, but everything worked. I don't know the condition of what's on the cod. The periscopes worked. And so you'll see. And if you can do that, you can do whatever you can take to, you'll enjoy it. He will too. Ask him where they stored all the small arms and you will be surprised.
Where did they store them?
Yeah, we got a Modus to take when we deployed, and we even stored that in there. And you make sure you ask him where the officer's head in the shower for the officers is, because it's the same place, and what it looks like.
Wow.
These are where you have to close the valve and unscrew to flush it, and you have to be very careful and learn how to do it in the right order, or the sea pressure, if you're too far down, will blow everything back up in your face.
Oh, that sounds dangerous.
Nah.
Hey, but Joel, we had a question for you.
Young sailors, they didn't do it to the officers. We were learned about that in school, not to do that stupid kind of stuff. Anyways, that's what the main thing I wanted to get to you was a challenge for that. And that's
okay.
It's time.
We had a question for you real quick, Joel, and this came up last weekend.
Yep.
We were watching the Facebook watch thing of the show The Firefly, and the subject came up of spaceships, and I mentioned that they must really smell bad, and Brita mentioned that the closest thing we have on Earth to like spaceships are submarines, and she said we should ask Joel, and I said I bet they stink too, because the ones I've been in have a residual odor that is you know, after 50 years of being flushed out with fresh air and they still smell bad, they must have been truly horrific when they were in operation.
Yes. Now I talked about that last time.
But the subject came up because we were talking about closed, you know, closed air.
They smelled when I went in town in Japan, which I didn't do much. But this Japanese could point to you and say, Sensikon sailor. Sensikon, Japanese for submariner. And I did have to get undressed at the back. And several guys will say that they had to do the same thing, get undressed at the door to the house coming home one time.
Okay.
Smelled so bad. Oh, yeah, and that never went away. Well, yeah. I mean, I can smell like that now, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Sure.
Once you get transferred off, it'll go.
So, do you believe that a spaceship probably stinks as well?
Pardon me?
Do you believe that, you know, like a spaceship, people traveling in a spaceship probably stinks as well?
That's diesel engines, okay?
Okay.
That's the old diesel boats. The nukes don't smell.
Oh, so you smell like diesel. You don't smell like disgusting people.
Like diesel, because it gets all through, especially when I talked to you last time about how if you were in rough weather and you were stuck at periscope depth, you were running the engines and you sucked the vacuum.
Yeah.
It would all rush back in when the head valve opened. Boy, and it would rush because that comes from the engine rooms the back.
And your all ears bleed.
Booms would come back in through there. Oh, yeah.
So the spaceship thing still is undetermined. Okay.
Cause I would be about like being in a nuke.
I don't know what nukes smell like.
Nothing.
Oh. Well.
Okay, they do dinky diesel on board, but mainly it's, you know what a nuke is? It's a steam plant.
Yeah.
It's a great old-fashioned everyday steam plant, but the power, instead of some other type of engine, you know, motivational thing to create the steam, it's a nuclear reactor, but it's an old-fashioned steam plant.
Yeah, instead of burning oil or coal to generate steam, it just heats it up with the nuclear fission.
Right. So all the brand new surface ships that have all these fancy engines now, what the heck do they call them? Anyways, they're the same as jet engines.
Oh, yeah, the gas turbines.
Gas turbines, that's it. The nukes are still steam engines.
That's kind of cool. And you know what's funny is like the Navy runs all these nuclear plants all over the place, and as far as I know, they've never had an accident with one.
Not that I know of, wouldn't tell us anyways.
Yeah, well.
and I are not cleared for that, Alan.
Right, but you know, but they have all these these nuclear plants that like they generate power with, and it's, you know, they Three Mile Island and Chernobyl and all these ones they have that have all these problems. And
yeah, but they don't take care of the way we do.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, you know,
We're in the U.S., we're so fussy about it. Maybe, I don't know if it'd be overboard fussy, but it's kept us safe.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole discussion we can have. You know, people don't realize the reason nuclear plants are dangerous, at least in the U.S. and Russia, is because they won't let... The Atomic Energy Commission won't let anyone build a safe plant because safe plants can't be used to generate weapons-grade uranium and plutonium.
Yes, I know.
Which is what they use. That's what they generate at those plants. So
Yep.
If they created safe ones, then they couldn't make the plutonium and the enriched uranium. So.
Yep.
All right. Well, Joel, you mentioned you wanted to talk about a Navy officer you served with and a couple other things.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I'm a member of an organization called the Jewish War Veterans. Like all the other veterans groups and all kinds of groups that are nonprofit, they make an annual calendar. Okay. Let me start by explaining the Jewish War Veterans. Have you heard of Catholic War Veterans or Protestant War Veterans?
No.
That's because the Jewish War Veterans, which is the oldest of all the veterans groups, see, people don't know, fought after the Civil War because people said Jews don't fight.
Oh, that's not true.
No, of course not, but that's the reason it was formed, and that's why it's the oldest.
Wow.
Came to me when I was on the Hammond on the gun line and offered me to join, said, and it was for free as long as I was on active duty. Little did they know I was going to stay for 20 years. And put me in a chapter that's in New Jersey. I think I'm still in that chapter. I don't correspond with them. But every year they send a calendar, and in particular, the Jewish War Veteran calendar is one I always hang up in the house. There's two calendars I care about. It's my annual submarine calendar, which I get from the sub vets, and the Jewish War Veteran calendar. Well, I got the new calendar just after Christmas and opened it up and was paging through it. And what happens is on each month, instead of a pinup type of thing or something else.
I was about to ask.
There's the Jewish Veteran of the Month, as it were, okay? They go back, there's some World War II guys, there's some sandbox guys, some Vietnam guys, et cetera, et cetera. Lo and behold, I get to Mr. October.
it's kind of a pinup.
Is this guy named Arnie Reznikoff. Arnie Reznikoff is actually retired Navy captain, chaplain, rabbi, Arnold E. Reznikoff. And you can find him on the internet. He's got a huge website or web spot there. If you go to it's Arnold Reznikoff or Arnold E. Reznikoff.net or something, he's got pages and pages of stuff. I don't know if he learned from me or I. Anyways, back in Japan, we served together. He started out his Navy career as a line officer, as a riverine in Vietnam. And then the Navy accepted his desire to become a rabbi. And I don't know if he got paid for the time he was with the biblical school or if it was a leave of absence and he came back on active duty. And his first assignment was in Yokosuka, Japan, which is where I was. And I was his Jewish lay leader.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed in semi-contact, for a long time. As a matter of fact, I sent him an email when I got the calendar and said, "Hey, you're Mr. October." And he said, "I haven't got my calendar yet. I'm going to have to go track it down, or you're going to have to send me a copy." Anyways, when my youngest, and I was his lay leader, and we did a lot of stuff. When I was at the depot, I had I was first material director, and I had all the warehouses and all the traffic management and transportation and materials handling equipment. And I had a whole division that worked for my department that were carpenters for packaging and crating. And I also had another division that had material handling equipment and some automobiles. And I'd help him get around to places because the base sometimes wouldn't help him. And my carpenters helped him out a few times, even though we had a complete public works operation there. There was a naval facility, repair facility, which is a shipyard, and public works center, and a supply depot. But my guys helped him a lot. He was... He delivered the closing prayer at the 1982 dedication of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, and there's a lot of things he did. Members, victims of Holocaust. When my youngest daughter was born, in the Jewish religion, if it's a boy, you have a bris, and if it's a girl, it's a baby naming ceremony, and he was the rabbi for the baby naming ceremony.
Oh.
So, and he remembers all that. We do too, and he's done a lot of things, and I'm just really pleased, including, some of the things. U.S. military participated in the annual U.S. Days of Remembrance of the Victims of the Holocaust because he did it, made him do it, and the first U.S. chaplain was studied at the Naval War College.
Huh.
And... led Israel's first official Martin Luther King service to President's residence.
Huh.
And served as command chaplain at the U.S. European Command, where he was top chaplain for all forces in all of Europe. He was also, I think if I remember from reading his resume, he was the base chaplain at Submarine Base New London. So, and after his retirement, they called him back and made him a civil servant with the title of Special Assistant to the Secretary and Chief of Staff of the United States Air Force.
Wow.
Because this was when they were trying to figure out what chaplains could say and do. All that nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
It still hasn't gone away, by the way. And so all I've got to say is I'm so, and then he was recently gave the opening prayer at the opening of Congress. I think it was this was before the new year. He sent it to me and I sent it around. I don't know if I sent you on the list to see it. But it's only a couple minutes where he gave, and this was after the murdering at the temple in Pittsburgh, and
right.
Comments, you know, for that. And so,
you know, I'm wondering about something you said earlier, Joel.
Pardon me?
I was wondering about what you said earlier about how the whole organization started after the Civil War, because people were saying that Jews don't fight. And do you think it's because people were kind of thinking about the more Orthodox Jews? I know that they don't.
Well, they said that after the War of Independence, too. The Jews didn't participate in the war, or they certainly did.
Yeah, of course.
As a matter of fact, there was plenty of them. And that's just the standard. You still hear people say that, and it's nonsense. See, you grew up with Israel in existence.
Mm-hmm.
Right? My younger years, because I'm just prior to the baby boomers. I was born in 1945. Baby boomers start 46, I think mid 46. I was born while World War II was still going on, and so I've seen how. I had a fight in junior high school, and my dad, to the day he died, remembered that because he had to come to school out of the playground. Probably ground at junior high, right? Anyways, it wasn't middle school. It was 7th, 8th, and 9th before they all changed to doing middle school as 6th, 7th, and 8th. And I had a fight on the playground because there was, quote, all this bullying nonsense. He called me a dirty Jew, and I knocked him on his butt. And off we both went to the principal's office, and both of our parents were called, yada yada, you know. Anyways, that's the only time I ever did that.
I'm sure, but it was worth it, though.
Yes. And so I grew up in a time where there was still plenty of stuff like that. You have, you know, because you're approximately the same age as my oldest daughter, so you didn't see much of that. You see some of that in the way some people treat Israel.
Oh, and yes. Especially in some of the, you know, we see a lot of in politics, especially in the, you know, some certain people that are representing the Democratic Party, there's a lot of anti-Israel sentiment.
Yes, and is it anti-Jewish?
Yeah.
Yes, it is anti-Jewish, too.
Yep.
And have I ever had, you know, so... I've had it, so I know about it. And I wrote a piece. It's too long to read. I thought I sent it to you last time. I don't know that you read all the stuff I sent you, because I sent you way too much stuff.
I read a lot of it.
But, you know, for instance, it started out, as many of the Second Amendment community say about the last four words of this amendment, what part of shall not be infringed, do you not understand? Where else in the United States is there such a strong constitution? Is there such strong language? And I go on and on about that, and I talk about, hey, it's not just firearms, you know. After all, we do have there is in the Constitution letters of mark and reprisal, and that means private ships, privateering, and cannons from your yard, etc.
Oh, yes.
I sent this paragraph, and it finishes with this paragraph, which after Rabbi Reznikoff sent me his the prayer that he did at Congress, I sent him this because he mentioned the killing of the Jews at the synagogue. This is the last paragraph. I am Jewish. I have a Jewish name. I look Jewish, too. I am over 70 years old and have arthritis. I cannot run, nor can I fight. So I carry tools for self-defense. I do not know how much these tools will help, but to paraphrase, someone else has said it will better the odds. That was the lady from Texas whose husband was killed at Luby's. And to take a motto from an organization in Los Angeles, founded by families of Holocaust survivors, called Jews Can Shoot, their saying is, nothing says never again like an armed Jew, and I agree.
Boy, that's the truth.
That is the truth. Yeah. You know, this is a good segue, actually, because we're going to talk a little bit about guns and what your gun preferences are.
Well,
like home self-defense and personal self-defense and just for fun. Like, what do you like to shoot? When's, you know, if you were to go out shooting, what would you want to shoot?
For quite a while, because it's quite a trip out to the range.
Sure.
And there's a closer in range. It's not really a range. It's open space, but the illegals go by there, and I don't want to make that kind of thing. They did back then.
Mm-hmm.
I don't shoot as much as I think I should from all the what I do is I listen to a lot of podcasts with training. Okay. I can find a lot of firearms training podcasts, and I do a lot of listening to those. And generally, I'm a Jewish cowboy. All right. There was a time when, before my arthritis really bothered me, I was going to go shoot SAS. Okay. And because SAS was not far away from here. Now they moved it so far away, it's too hard. I'm not going to spend an hour and a half in the car each way to shoot SAS. So, I mean, I have all the tools for that. My pride and joy, which I hardly do anything with, is my Uberti replica of, what is it, the 1858 Colt Army.
I looked at getting some of those. They're not cheap.
No, they're not. And it, with the 1870 conversion to away from black powder, so that I can just load it with.
For people that don't know, SAS is the Single Action Shooting Society. They're the ones that do like the cowboy action shooting and stuff like that.
So. Let's call it cowboy action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and they dress up in cowboy clothes. No.
Yeah, I saw some of those guys shoot at a range I used to go to, and I was talking to one of the guys, and you know, I was talking about, you know, the thing I always talk about, which is, man, those guns are expensive. And he goes, and he starts laughing, and he said, "You think the guns are expensive? You should see how much people spend on their outfits."
Yes, indeed. yes, indeed. And it's fun. I dress around here. I wear. I don't wear my cowboy boots a lot these days, but I have a few pair, and I'm always in jeans with big belts, but the big belts mainly are, you know, gun belts. And I have a couple of cowboy sport coats that I wear all the time, and several cowboy hats.
In Arizona, the gun culture is a little different than in, you know, a lot of the rest of the country.
Yes, yeah. Let me tell you about that for a minute, because you mentioned that. I told you, you know, you want to spend the hour just like that, because I thought about it to narrow it down. I'm currently wearing a hat while sitting here with you saying Arizona Citizens Defense League. That was founded on the basis of we used Virginia Citizens Defense League as a model.
Ah, okay.
Years ago, I don't remember how many folks are in it now, but there's a lot of them, a lot of us in it. I'm a life member. We have one meeting a year. Every other year it's in Tucson. Every other year it's in Phoenix. This last year it was in Phoenix, and my arthritis was bothering me, so that's the first meeting I've missed. But I'll go to the one in Tucson when it comes up.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't have my arthritis, I probably would go to the Second Amendment Foundation's annual meeting too, but that's too much traveling. And so I wear around the house, and sometimes on short trips, I wear my Arizona Citizens Defense League hat. I generally don't put on a Navy or a submarine ball cap, except for, events that relate to veterans. And when I go to a big store like Walmart, and I'll wear something that says I was, but sometimes I wear my cowboy hat, one of my cowboy hats and cowboy sport coats, which are very comfortable. I love to wear, and they're very rugged. So, well, let me get it back to that. So supposedly Arizona is rated number one for Second Amendment.
Right.
However, last year, Arizona Citizens Defense League had to fight off the governor, a Republican, trying to get in takes your guns. Red flag laws.
Oh, that thing. Yeah.
And we got that. The Citizens Defense League got that defeated in the legislature, but he wants the legislature to do it again this year. So, I follow. We get regular emails, and so
is he trying to not get reelected, or
well, it's his last term anyway. So
okay, I see. Yeah, I see how it is.
Well, I'm not. I'm not thrilled with our politicians to begin with. I don't think that there are some that are very conservative and very let me change it from conservative and liberal to constitutional and right. Not constitutional. That's a better way to put it, because in the old days, liberal comes from liberalism, which comes from libertarianism, which is you leave me alone and I'll leave you alone. As long as you're not hurting me or somebody else, you can do what you want, type of thing. That kind of thing. We got a lot of folks like that. But so the Arizona Citizens Defense League has been really, really a top notch. I've made it a habit. They can put up signs. The law is it has to be the correct sign on all the entrance doors for a place that has a license to serve alcohol by the drink or a government building. Mm-hmm. Government buildings do not have to put up a sign. As a matter of fact, the Green Valley Public Library has no signs.
Hmm.
And so if any organization that I might be part of has a meeting there, I go. If they hold it at a place called Green Valley Recreation, which I have to be a member of because it's in my deed, they have a sign which by law is not enforceable. The only enforceable law sign is the ones where you have a government building and we're trying to get them to take down the signs of government buildings. I haven't been up to the legislature, but I believe you can carry in the legislature. And but I make it a habit of not going to play. They can't do anything to me, and I can keep things pretty well hidden. It's not an issue. I do OWB. I keep outside the waste. I have everything, but I prefer my OWB. It's a secure holster and easy to get to, especially if I've got a sport. I wear that sport coat a lot.
What is the gun that you carry on a regular basis?
I carry a revolver.
Oh, a revolver. Okay, great.
Although people have been trying to talk me into carrying something with more rounds in it.
What kind of revolver do you carry?
Oh. I have speed strips on my belt, and I have a dump pouch in one of my pockets.
So which one do you carry? What brand? What model?
I have a Taurus that I bought used a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
What does it call it? Tracker. 45 Colt.
Oh.
Because I also have a, the other Taurus, the Judge. I have a Judge.
Oh, yes.
Oh, boy.
Okay, when they first came out. So they can interchange in holsters pretty easily.
Oh, cool.
And, And I can use all the same ammunition, plus the judge it takes 410. And so I used to carry the judge. I used to carry a couple of them. I lost a lot of weight, so the strip that holds my ankle holster on me is so too loose, so I can't do that anymore. But and our annual meetings are open carry, and you'll see open carry. I go there's a restaurant here that in Green Valley I go to not as often as I used to, but I used to, once in a while I open carry, and I'll open carry from time to time, and I see other people at Mickey D's.
Mm-hmm.
And my handyman knows that I'm carrying, and he's carrying because I'm carrying. And my yard guy carries, and last time he was here, he was open carrying. It's a first. He usually concealed carries. He was open carrying doing my yard. And his wife is my cleaning lady, and she carries, and she has actually made a comment to me that she feels that this is the safest place she goes to because she knows I have a gun.
Wow.
And so, there's a lot of places, you know, if a hospital has a sign or if a restaurant puts up a sign, it's irrelevant. It doesn't mean anything. However, if they see the gun, they can ask you to leave, put it in the car. Now, if you do neither, now they can call in.
Yeah, then it's trespassing.
He cited it, and it's for trespass.
Yeah.
And so, have I been to places where I was stuck having to go and had signs? Yes. And, you know, the law is you have to have them on every door. And I was at a hospital, when was it, a couple of years ago? And there was a sign on the door. I was up there to get a test. And so I went to another door that had no sign, walked in. I had to take all my clothes off and put them in a locker. And it was a locker. And
well,
took the lock and take and got my test and left. And I had to have that operation a while back. It was a year ago now. Jesus. And I'll never tell whether I went to the hospital in the ambulance carrying and keep it locked up in the locker locker they gave me while I had my operation and one day recovery and out, you know. So, you just don't, because there's really no law. But that's the thing. There's a guy who does a lot of Second Amendment stuff, Armed American Radio, Mark Walters.
Mm-hmm.
Who I love to listen to. He's been out here a couple of times. I've met him. I got a couple of pictures with him. And he just says, they won't see it. Just keep it hidden away. And that's we'll just ignore him. If he'll look for the door that doesn't have the sign. Yeah, I do the same thing.
Yeah, most people don't notice, especially if you got a shirt or a jacket over it. I mean, heck, I've open carried nobody notices. So
they don't at all, especially what I have now become is I'm a guy who never tucks any shirts.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah, and I just buy shirts.
You guys have your male privilege in that way.
Yeah, we're a bunch of slobs now. Nobody, in Texas, we don't really have enough cold weather. You try to wear a jacket most of the year in Texas and you're automatically suspicious because it's hot as hell. And Arizona has the same problem.
I'm glad you said that. This morning, we do get cold winters
here. Oh,
remember, not like Brita. Okay, look, I was born in Chicago, did many years in Milwaukee.
Yeah, so you know cold.
Came out to Los Angeles, so I understand cold. But this morning, when I went out to smoke a cigar and listen to podcasts, my thermometer said 30 degrees.
Ah.
And by the time it was 4:00 in the afternoon, I went back out to start clearing my thoughts for this conversation. I lit a short cigar. Actually, what I did is I have some good cigars and I cut them up into smaller pieces. Oh, Joel, don't tell that to anybody because cigar smokers will tell you, oh, my goodness. Anyway, so that I didn't have to leave an unsmoked cigar out there. and it was 71. Okay.
Nice.
Now that's because we live in the desert. And why is it there's a desert? Because there's no rain. Why is there no rain? Because there's no clouds.
Right.
So what does that mean to the
temperature?
That means wide swings in temperature. And in the wintertime here, there has been years in the past, in all the years I've lived here, where I've gone out in the morning and it was 18, a couple of times it was 18 degrees. Several times it was in the 20s. Like I say, this morning it was 30. Some of the times it doesn't warm up beyond, you know, it'll still warm up. Now, if there's rain, then it may, you know, then it won't necessarily warm up. It was a clear day, and so it warmed back up to 70 degrees.
Nice.
And so, yes.
I've got about 6 months to wait until I see 70 degrees, I think.
Yeah. Well,
usually by June, we're hitting the 70s, I would say.
Well, here's what you can do.
Yeah.
No, if you're
travel,
do this is, but you can move here and go to the work.
Everybody that talks to Brita wants her to move near where they live.
Of course. Now, I'm only all I can offer is weather and a better tour environment. Well, now you know you guys aren't. You know, Ohio overall isn't. So, well, got rid of your. But. That governor, I don't remember, he was a legislature, right? He was a congressman way back when I was on active duty. And my boss, when I was at the SECNAV, at the Secretariat Staff, and he knew each other. And it was my job to find a big, huge picture of the USS Ohio to give to my boss to go over to Congress and give to him.
Which guy was it?
Your past governor.
Kasich?
Which one?
Your immediate past governor.
Kasich.
Yes.
What a turd that guy is. I don't like him.
Yes. But, we had a lot of dealings like that. So, well, just like our guys, you know, our senators and representatives, the Congress, there's a couple of representatives that are pretty good, but I wouldn't give you 2 cents for either of our senators at the moment. But, and one of them is a retired 06.
Hmm.
Well, that just goes to show you can't trust an officer.
Well, right. Now, I met her person. And I gave her it was right when my editorial appeared in the local paper about 50 is not as old as you think. And here we got 90-year-olds swimming around having a great time with their lady friends. You know, so... I had some dealings with her that she was not responsible to. I don't need to say anything more. I don't want to mention her name. But I'm disappointed. I have things to say about, you know. Somebody wrote this in a book, and this book was reported on at a local radio station many years ago. The guy wrote about the military services and said that the Air Force was like a civilian job. And the Army, well, that's the Army. And the Marines, well, that's a street gang focused on good.
That's pretty much right.
And then,
that's a good description.
Navy, that's a calling. And then he talks specifically about submariners saying, man, we're on top of it all. You know, so, of course, I'm tooting. But you came out pretty good. A street gang focused on good is nothing bad to say.
My favorite was Eleanor Roosevelt's description.
Oh, yeah.
Which was?
You
don't remember.
You haven't memorized it, Alan.
Well, are we going now? Did I give you enough about 2A and Arizona? Are there any other questions you have, Rita?
No, that was fine.
I just wanted to mention the Eleanor Roosevelt quote.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
The Marines I have seen around the world have the cleanest bodies, the filthiest minds, and the highest morale and the lowest morals of any group of animals I've ever seen. Thank God for the United States Marine Corps. She was a fan, apparently.
Yeah. Talk about a bad backhanded compliment.
I think that's completely accurate.
Well, I don't know. I worked with a lot.
I hear Tig.
Sorry, my cat's yelling for his supper.
That's all right. You know, not as many Marines as you work with, but I've dealt with former and retired Marines a lot these days, and with some Marines, you know, I was not in any command really where there were Marines other than gate guard. And I think the Navy and all the services have done away with that. And
yeah, they have.
So,
unfortunately, I think that's a mistake. But you know,
you got to give the Marine. You got that was a chance to have a little bit of shore duty. You know, I understand that from being a Navy guy. You can't spend. Although I can point to guys who've spent most of 20 years at sea, and more.
That's amazing.
You know, my old friend from Deep Submergence, who's the first name in Blind Man's Bluff, and I talked about him last time.
Spent right.
He was 26 years in the Navy. I'm not sure that he ever had. Oh, I think he may have gone to War College or something, or taught at War College. But otherwise, he was at sea, in command of the development group, and that was a seaborne command, and he was going to sea, and he spent time on ships that were quite small. The biggest he went on was the Point Loma. I don't want to necessarily remember that, but this was, did I tell you, sir, that's where I was convinced that women sailors are equal to men sailors. I learned from the Point Loma.
I don't think you mentioned that.
I don't recall that.
Point Loma, before the carriers had women and even the tenders, the Point Loma will start out as USNS, Point Barrow, and was brought as it's an LSD, landing ship dock, and it was brought into the Navy to support the Deep Submergence Project, to support the DSVs and the DSRVs, the bathyscaphs and the rescue vehicles. And because it was civil service manned, it had all, there was no big bunk rooms. Everything were two and four person type of rooms, okay, with heads in each one, okay? So they put women on board because it was easy to do, because they could be easily segregated out and not get in a lot of trouble, which they did. When this first was done, there was a lot of problems, lots and lots of problems. I used to have lunch with a skipper when he was in port in Long Beach, who would complain about the problems with the women on his ship. Not that it was the women, but because there was women on the ship, and there was nothing really made for it. There was lots of pregnancies.
Oh boy!
And so this avoided that, and frankly, they didn't have any of those problems. And the two things that I say why women are equal, when I first went aboard on the quarter deck, you have the officer of the day, well, you know, there's probably a first class or a chief, and you also may have a couple others, and you'll have a messenger of the watch that runs around and does things. And the messenger of the watch was a woman in her short sleeve coat, in a short sleeve uniform, with tattoos up and down her arms. I looked at the tattoos and I said, "By God, you're welcome in the Navy." You
know? Wow.
Then the second supply officer, I knew the first supply officer when it got converted, because I was in the shipyard working on the conversion when it was being converted, and I knew the first supply officer. Then the second supply officer was a woman. And when I came aboard to see her, she said, "Joel, I'll walk up to my stateroom. You can leave all your junk in my stateroom, and we'll go take a tour, and we'll look at all the supply spaces for you, et cetera, et cetera. And we'll go to the wardroom, have lunch." Blah, blah, blah. Okay. She said, "That's my stateroom over there. Just drop your stuff in it." So I went in her stateroom, and she had her own stateroom because the ship was big enough and it was six. As a Navy O3, I would not have had my own stateroom. I didn't on the Hammond. And it would have been a three or six-man stateroom in the diesel boats.
Wow.
And which if you sneezed into the hallway, in the passageway. So I looked up above her bunk, and hanging above her bunk was a picture of a fold-out naked man.
Oh, boy. Okay.
My God. Are women welcome in this lady? You bet. She's a sailor through and through. We were walking around, and I saw one of the women off. It was the engineer. It was the other woman off. Smoking a cigar.
Oh, gosh.
This was when you could do it all over the ship. And I said, holy cow, she's smoking a cigar. She says, yeah, I do that too. I said, you know, this item number three. And so that's my story. Gosh. I've long since accepted that because they can do anything.
Sure.
Especially like
that's amazing.
But we got way off on a tangent.
Yeah, we did.
That's all right. That's what the scoreboard is for. Did you check
for anything of the homework you sent me?
Oh, gosh.
No.
You don't even remember. A little bit about the homework you sent me. One was about the BuzzFeed.
Right.
Here's my thoughts about BuzzFeed.
I would love to hear it.
Sent me. And in order to read more than the first paragraph, I had to get set up a password, et cetera. And I said, BuzzFeed isn't worth that. Okay? That's nope. My view.
Okay.
I agree. It's not.
My view on the guy who was over in Vegas now, who wrote the article about your self-protection.
Mike Rowe. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that, you know.
I wanted to mention that because especially the third, he talks about several lessons he learned from gun owners. But the one I thought was interesting was the third one where he was on a crab boat or something like that. And he was worried about the storm and was thinking maybe we should be safer to turn back because safety first. And, you know, you hear that a lot. And it's like, you know, safety first, safety first, safety first. And I think that, you know, in my opinion, we've gone a little too far on the safety. And I was happy in a digression. The chief of staff of the Army has gotten rid of the stupid green belt, the high visibility belt that they made everybody wear all the time. But anyway, the captain, he says in the story that Mike Rowe is telling, he says, safety first. I'm the captain of the crab boat. The captain, also a gun owner, told him, my job's not to get you home safe. My job's to get you home rich. If you want to get home safe, that's on you. And it's absolutely true. You as an individual are responsible for your own safety. You can't farm that out on somebody else.
That's the basic tenet of all of us who make sure we are self-protected. You bet.
Mm-hmm.
But that's absolutely correct. Yeah. Now, on Navy ships, you know, we still did a lot of things to be safe, but let me tell you, you still had to go places where you shouldn't be and you couldn't get caught.
Well, sure. Yeah. You know, in time of war, safety is important, but it's not as important as completing the mission.
Correct. That's right. So... I think that was the first paragraph of the story, but that's okay. I'm not looking at it now. I don't know this by memory, and no, I don't have one of those memories that you can recognize any way, shape, or form. I don't know anything about that.
Well, yeah, I'm a big fan of Mike Rowe, but I thought that was interesting because people use the whole safety thing as a. You know, political expedient for doing all manner of terrible things to other people. We'll do this and we'll keep you safe. Do this and we'll keep you safe. You know, let the TSA feel you up at the airport and it'll keep you safe. And the reality is none of that keeps you safe. And only you can keep you safe.
You know, let me tell you what I'm doing in May. My oldest grandson is getting bar mitzvahed.
Oh, nice. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. He's in, guess where? California with a cat.
Oh, no.
Now, he's in a part of California where it's one of the counties that allows concealed carry and all that. And I'm using the word allow intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And my daughter lives around a lot of cops and sheriff's deputies and stuff. And there's a few of them that are in the synagogue. And I sent her a website, you know, about safety in the church and synagogues and stuff to look at. I forget what the name of it is. I've got it on my favorites, but it's and my plan, because my revolver doesn't break any of their rules about what kind of gun. Now, I do carry things on my belt that I can't take with me. So I'll have to leave them at home. But, and 3/4 of my trip to her house is in Arizona. And so what I'm planning on doing is, if we get closer, I've been talking to her about it. She has no problem with this, okay?
Sure.
It's my grandson that has that I gave a BB gun to. And she's taken them to for the farmers? What is that organization?
They have the FFA? Kids?
No.
Future Farmers of America?
The kids go out and they get to shoot, and the kids have all shot. So they've all shot. And so she has no problem with any of this. She took them to down here in Arizona. When they came back, they all had their cap guns, and they were all shooting at each other.
As one does.
And I looked at him, and I gave up. I said, hey, I'm not going to tell him not to point the guns at each other. Yeah. You know? That was the wrong time. So she's on board, and I'm going to get her to connect me up with that couple of local cops, because I can carry, theoretically I have to have it locked and unloaded, and I can do that when I get to California, and it's not that long a ride to get to her house, but I can still carry it in her house.
Sure.
And with the rabbi's permission, I don't know what the rule is. Maybe I can carry it there, but I'm going to try to get the rabbi's permission by way of one of the law officers that attend the synagogue, and they won't see it anyways, because I don't want to see anything like that happen. And I read to you that thing that I wrote.
Right.
Shall not be.
Well, a lot of carrying guns is, concealed carry is, kind of don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, my friend who does all of this, who I mentioned with the local program, says, yeah, they won't know that you've got it.
Yeah. Sometimes it's better just not to talk about it.
I don't want them to look at my baton. That's not legal there. And so I can't take my baton. I used to have a sword cane, which was also legal there, but I gave up on the sword cane because something? It's too. I can draw faster than I get the sword cane out. And secondly, where do you put a sword cane when you go to a restaurant? You put it down.
Right.
Can a little kid come over and grab it and say, "Oh, look, a cane," and realize that it opens up and there's a sword in it? Mm-hmm. I said, "No, because I don't want to have anybody else."
Right.
So I got rid of the sword cane, and that would not have been a lot.
Joel? Did you follow at all the thing that has been in the news, with the kids who were in Washington D.C. the teenagers?
Yeah.
And we're in the altercation.
Let me tell you, this sets the tone for this. Okay.
My
view on things. One of our World War II submariners, who still comes to our monthly World War II submariner breakfast, wears a MAGA hat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't think I have to say anything more. I don't stop him. I have no problem with that. And I've listened, because all my 2A guys are in Las Vegas now, I've been listening to too much of the conservative talk. And all I've heard is up one side and down the other about the kids. And oy vey.
Right.
There's something particular you're looking, you think,
well,
I'd offer an opinion on? I
wanted to ask you.
I wonder, is the guy who claims he was a Vietnam veteran, I didn't do any homework on it. Is he really a Vietnam veteran?
He
did serve. He was a Marine. He had a very troublesome military record. He went AWOL a number of times.
He was discharged as an E-1.
Yeah, after 4 years.
Yeah, but what kind of discharge did he get?
Just a discharge. It was not, I don't believe it was an honorable discharge. It was just a general discharge. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I was in the Marine Reserve, and I got to tell you, you have to really be a fuck up to be discharged after 4 years in the Marine Reserve as an E-1, because they practically give you an E-2 like the first day.
Yeah.
And you know, I knew guys that.
So isn't that your reward for graduating from boot camp?
Damn near. And you know, it's like, come on, guys. You know, you got to really be a screw up to. I mean, honestly, the reserve's not that hard. It's really not.
Yeah, but I did a lot of dealings when I was in Washington, D.C. We were in the secretariat. Our particular staff was very small. And my boss, a two-star admiral, worked with the reserves, got us to where we would get ACDUTRAs from the reserves. The local reserve command sent us their weekend warriors to serve their weekends. It was during the week. Mm-hmm. They would do it. A couple of guys that did that ran their own businesses, so they could do that. They would help us out. And then their 2 weeks of active duty would be with us. And they were, I mean, these guys were absolutely first rate to work with. So I, you know, the officers, yes, and there were supply car officers on top of that. So, you know, now that's, you guys and everybody listening to this doesn't know what a supply car officer is or, you know, one from another, but those are, were there ever any bad ones in there? Yes. I know an admiral that made admiral and got fired. So, yes. Yeah. That happened when I was on the staff of this other admiral who was absolutely wonderful. Absolutely. And he retired out of the job because he was a two-star. And they had two jobs in the Navy for a Supply Corps three-star. One of them was as commander of Defense Logistics Agency. And that rotated amongst the services and it was not our turn.
Oh, well.
The other one was the vice chief of naval materiel, and that was and that whole command was done away with. It was only way above. All of us who were in it were moved over to someplace else, but that was done away with. So the other three star was gone, and he was going to make it. He would have had that third star, and so these guys are good. One of these days, I'll have to tell you about my time on the Secretariat staff.
Well, we'll have to do that on another show because we're out of time.
Bad in time. I haven't been paying any attention to it.
Yeah.
When we go, I want to read something.
Okay.
A couple of paragraphs long because it's it has to be the game. Okay. And it's sort of a, thank you very much, Tom. So where else are we going to go? You know my thing about the kids.
Well, what did you want to, I know that in your email you said you wanted to finish up with something. So like.
Are you ready for it?
Yep.
We're at the end, Joel.
Okay, so you have to tell me. I'm not a clock. Started this thing early today. I couldn't get Skype working.
Oh, yes.
I can enjoy listening to this tomorrow.
Hopefully, Alan recorded everything.
I am.
I don't care about that. I have no problem with that. In the Submarine Veterans Organization, we have a lot about remembered. How we got here. Read off a list every month at a meeting. Read off a list of the names of all the submarines and how many in the crew and how they got lost. Each month, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I, for the past several January, I've asked permission to read this. And I've read this also at a couple other veterans meetings I've been to this month. And so here it goes. It's about starts about a submarine that's lost in there. USS Argonaut, SS-166. January 10th, 1943, the Argonaut was sunk by enemy action. On December 7th, 1941, the bombing of Pearl Harbor, first to engage in action back at the Japanese. In its wardroom was a young officer named Dick O'Kane. He later went on to become the exec of the USS Wahoo and the CEO of the USS Tang. By the way, there's a book about each of them. And he wrote the Tang book. Even though Tang was sunk by its own errant torpedo and Commander O'Kane was captured by the Japanese, he was to become our leading submariner in enemy assets destroyed. He was awarded the Medal of Honor. Retired Rear Admiral O'Kane retired to a farm in Northern California. His wife could tell you stories about him. One in particular, Japanese captors knew who he was. He took up smoking just to be allowed to be given breaks from his incessant beatings. Why do I tell you this? He was a member of VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars, ship 1928. Yes, ship, not post. When I was there, two posts were called ships. It was formed because of Dick O'Kane and with his help. 1928 was the commissioning date, USS Argonaut. This VFW is located near Mare Island Naval Shipyard in Northern California. When I lived in Northern California, I was asked to join. It was my first VFW endeavor. I met Dick O'Kane and many other World War II submariners there. Some became good friends. As I lived in the foothills above California's Central Valley, I joined the Sacramento chapter of the World War II submarine veterans as an associate member as well. As many of you know who know my history, you know, as a kid, I read all the books about World War II submarining and went in diesel boats because of their exploits. The Naval Submarine League wanted to form a Northern California chapter. I helped get it going with significant support from Dick O'Kane and VFW ship 1928 submariners. I was told that for some reason he liked me and was willing to help participate in any of our events. I was its founding president and served in that position for 6 years. I had the distinct honor of attending his funeral. He passed away, and I was personally charged with getting his Medal of Honor to the Submarine Bofin Museum at Pearl Harbor. Admiral, it was an honor to have known you. May you rest in peace.
That was great.
Yeah, wow.
Thank you, Joel.
What a guy.
Thank you for letting me say that. I would do it as much as
well. Thanks for saying it. That was great. My dad was in the Vietnam War, and one of the things I've always regret is not hearing more about. I know a lot of them don't want to talk about it, and he never did. But it's like when those guys die, they're everything they did kind of dies with them. And we don't know. And it seems, I guess the older I get, the more it seems like a really big loss that we don't have that anymore.
Yeah. Well, but if there were people who wrote about this stuff, now they were journalists and historians and what have you, and thanks to our modern day internet,
you can
find a lot. You have to do a lot of searching. For instance, because I haven't been able to find it, I challenge somebody who's listening to this to look up Francis Ham and the ship I was on when I was on the gun line. We were in a linebacker and linebacker two. What we did, one of the destroyers in our destroyer division, the Higbee, was bombed. Now that you can find on the internet. And I'm not sure how close we were to them, but we usually weren't very close. And so, but I have not been able to find that out. But, and all of what linebacker and linebacker two, what all that stuff was. That was, there was a lot of bombing by B-52s during that time and stuff. And, you know, we were kind of in places where we weren't supposed to be, you know, I think probably. But I can't prove it because I was already a supply car officer and my battle stations was, are you ready for this, in the supply office. Because I had sound-powered phones connected to everybody, and if we had to do, we had that battle feed the crew, you know, we could do it.
All right. Well, Joel, we are way, way over. So let's...
talking to me. Why not? Yeah. Why shouldn't I?
Let's call it a night, and we'll be back next week. And Joel, we want to have you on again sometime soon. And
let me propose something to you. I'll embarrass you. So now you have everybody on the scroll report. In April, April 11th is submarine birthday.
Okay.
Maybe sometime around that time. Doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. But and because I am retired, boy, am I shoveling it deep now? But you call me on a Wednesday, I might be able to show up on a Thursday.
Okay.
But you know where we're going, and I got, you know, I would like to talk about, here's some of the topics. You know, you guys talked about your senior year in high school. And you talked about some of you played music in your younger days. And you talked about, by the way, me too. And you talked about things like you're disappointed with Hollywood. And lately, including today, I was watching because I was waiting to, you know, for the time to show up for this. And I had concluded everything. And I turned on the TV and saw something I couldn't believe on one of the drama programs related to the Second Amendment. Yeah. I'll tell you. Talk about disappointing. And how they treat all the bad guys are former military bullcrap.
Yeah. Because they all have PTSD and they're all dangerous. And
I have a personal issue with that too. I think that that's a little bit overplayed, but that's my personal
opinion. Of course it is. Anyway, thank you, Joel. We got to go.
That's a heck of a way to end it.
But yeah, I know, on a high note there.
Let me put out the word to the three of you who do the podcast. When you're in the area, stop by and say hi.
Heck yeah. There
are places you can stay.
Okay.
And there's no problem in the one hotel that I had the Seafox stay at. There's no problem.
I think I'll just go to Green Valley and say, point me at the mayor. You know, Joel Greenberg.
Yeah, other than Joel Greenberg. We're not an incorporated town. We have the sheriff's deputies that patrol here.
That's unofficial right. Mayor. The unofficial mayor of Green Valley.
Green Valley, and that, you know, they're never going to get there, but that's a big mistake to do that.
Well, have a good night, Joel.
And thank you guys, and for helping me to, after last time I used Skype was with you guys.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, that's no problem.
All right.
And when it happen again, where I'll be all screwed up with Skype again, and you'll have to walk me out of it.
All right, everyone. Have a good weekend, and we'll be back.
Okay.
Take care. Thanks.
Good night, everybody. Bye.